This time on the Green Data Center podcast, we're going back to basics and we're going to talk about the data hall. And this can be called the red zone, the white space, whatever you want to call it. It's the space where you're keeping all of your IT equipment. This whole episode was brought up as a suggestion by a former student who had said, you know what, a lot of people just don't know what we're talking about with that data center space. What does that mean? What are people calling it and what's it about? So we're going to cover that today. Also, don't forget to check out the greendatacenterman.com website. You can see links to courses with the discounts already included at udemy.com, udemy.com. Of course, see the website to go ahead and fill out a form on things that you'd like to know about or learn more about. Definitely like to hear any input, and of course, like and subscribe in order to hear more. Let's jump right in into talking about the room where all of the IT equipment exists. This can be called a number of different things, and this might be known as the critical zone, the critical area, the IT room, a data hall, a red zone, a white room, whatever it might be. There's all sorts of names for it. And again, whatever it might be labeled, this is the place where your servers or storage, anything that you have as far as the IT equipment, it's where it's physically located, and you're bringing the power and the cooling to this room, to this zone, so that you can go ahead and support whatever IT services that you need to have. You're also providing all the telecom and all the other ancillary things that need to happen for that server, storage, network, whatever it might be within that room. There are all sorts of different arrangements and types, and those arrangements can be all sorts of different layouts, including a raised floor with a ceiling plenum. You might have a hot aisle, a cold aisle, some sort of containment, all sorts of different configurations that you might see. There's a lot of other nuances when you're talking about that data hall or IT space, and that includes how the operations is done, such as the commissioning or cleaning as well. So let's get started with some definitions before we dive into some of those other aspects a little bit deeper. Now, as far as terms, I think I'm going to settle on just calling it a data hall. That's, again, where you're keeping all of your data center equipment. And all of that is that centralized space where you have all of your the equipment that you need to do your IT operations together. And that means you might have a bunch of different computing equipment that's been configured to operate very close to one another so that they can operate together, plus have a bunch of redundancy maybe built in within a rack or within a row or within several rows across the data hall. And you might have a lot of IT equipment in that data hall, but there's a lot of support equipment and support rooms that are right adjacent to that data hall. And those can really be closely coupled in order to get the power as close as it possibly can to the equipment, as well as the cooling. So you might have a lot of air handling equipment or even water cooling equipment and piping right next to that data hall. And a lot of times, the reason that you have everything so closely tight in to that data hall is because there's a lot of efficiencies gained by keeping everything nice and close. On the mechanical side, those efficiencies can come from just having the air handling units right next to that data hall, and even having a fan array as part of that wall, like one wall or maybe a couple walls of that data hall. And it's just blowing cooler air across the data hall, and that becomes your cold air into the servers themselves. Now, I say cold air, of course, but of course that could be 80, 90 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, we're talking hot air in most circumstances, but to a server, that's cooler air than you might have on the rejection side. Now, the efficiency there is you keep those fans and such right next to that data hall. That way you don't have to duct everything over to the data hall from another room that's, say, two or three spaces away. Therefore, you avoid pressure losses, all sorts of ductwork losses, turns, all of that kind of thing. You're avoiding all of that wherever you can. The same exists on the power side. So you want to have your power, like your UPS systems and your electrical systems, as close as you can. And that way you can keep all those power systems right next to and adjacent to that data hall so that whenever you're running things through, you can have your power distribution unit or your power supply unit, whatever you want to call that distribution board that's going out to each one of your racks, as close as possible to the data hall. And then you might have, again, those PDUs, those power distribution units, in the data hall itself or along the exterior wall or at the end of each row or between racks, however that configuration might be. you want to keep it close, because the closer you can keep it, that means that you can not have to spend as much on the conduits and conductors that are going from the outside to the inside, transforming that power down, and then having a whole bunch of conductors going from a power room that's even adjacent or several rooms away into the data hall straight to the rack. You can have a bus bar that's over top a row of racks, or you might even have an A side and a B side busway that is serving an A and B side power to the rack. And you might have PDUs that are on an A side, B side, and those are rack-based PDUs, power distribution units, inside the rack itself. And you might not have that need for redundancy. So that's one of those aspects that you can look at too. But the closer you can bring that power from outside of the room into the room, serving those busways, the easier it can be and the more efficient it gets for your entire system. Let's back up a little bit and talk about the data hall size. It can be immense. And this is where we're talking about 500,000 square feet, which is about 50,000 square meters, more or less. But that entire data hall is a huge warehouse, is among the largest, something like that size. And you're going to have a lot of structural columns, etc., right in the middle of it. So you might have to break up your rows and racks and that kind of thing in order to provide that for a ceiling that's going overhead or a roof that might be overhead. Then again, on the smaller side, you just might have a large closet, and that could be deemed the data hall. Now, we don't have that called that too much anymore, but whenever we were looking at definitions, even by government standards, when they're looking to consolidate their data centers, they were even defining anything such as a closet that had, say, 4 or more servers or 8 servers or whatever size or whatever power. They were deeming that as a data center. And of course, that meant that it needed to be consolidated to a more central location with a lot more provisions for, say, redundancy and reliability. Now, on the smaller side, there might be a lot of enterprise customers out there that might say, well, 100 square feet or 10 square meters, that's a data hall, or it could be a data center, according to them. And that's by their own definition, of course. So what we're starting to get away from is it really? Not really. We are instead starting to call those more of a network space, because that is usually what we're talking about existing in that such a small type of room, is just network equipment. And that might be a nice node for a lot of people to go ahead and do a lot of patching into, especially of all sorts of systems. Or you might have a secure side or an unsecure side, or you know, like an A, B, C, whatever that is, you might have that all pass through that network room instead of that being treated as a data hall with that same type of reliability, redundancy, and expectations. You could call that a network room and not have to worry about treating it like a regular typical data center with all of the obligations and standards you might be trying to adhere to just for such a small room. Now, you have everything in between as well. So what you deem usually up from there, say about 1,000 square feet or 100 square meters, yeah, okay, let's call it a data hall or something, so that we are designating it as something that needs to be paid attention to, that it's on a critical network or a path, and it needs to adhere to a different set of standards that you're established for your data center. Let's talk about the raised floor a little bit. Yes, a lot of people will say, look, raised floor isn't used that much anymore. Yes, understood. However, it's still out there, especially with data centers, even 10 years old, have raised floor. And they were built that way. And they were built that way because they had certain purposes for that. And maybe they were using that raised floor for the air and water that was going underneath, or they're using that for the power and the network. And that's what it was done even 20 years ago. You had your power, your network, and even your air go under floor. Because again, you were not looking at those loads, that IT load, as being that high. Therefore, you could serve everything from underneath that raised floor. Now, if you haven't seen a raised floor, don't know what I mean by that, you can look it up online, but it means exactly what you think it is. All we're talking about is raising the floor up so that you can walk on it with a bunch of tiles. And those tiles are 2 feet by 2 feet. And that follows pretty much universally, so that you can put your racks on top of that raised floor and you can feed all sorts of things underneath. Now, that raised floor is held up by a bunch of pedestals that happen at each corner of that 2 foot by 2 foot tile. And real quick, those tiles are laid loosely on those pedestals, so there's nothing really holding them in place. No glue, they're not screwed down or anything like that. And what you do is you oftentimes would feed your cold air under that floor in that raised floor plenum below that raised floor. And what you do is replace those tiles as you built out your racks and installed them. You'd replace those loose tiles with perforated tiles. And those perforated tiles allow airflow to go to the supply side of your rack. So your entire row would have a cold aisle and then a hot aisle on the opposite side where you wouldn't put any perf tiles. But the idea is that you could supply all that cool air in that cold aisle so that you can have that available for the front side of the servers to use whenever they needed it. Now, you might say, well, I haven't seen a raised floor tile or anything like that, but it sounds pretty flimsy. It is not. These things weigh a bunch. So on top of that, they are typically rated for a certain amount. So they might have, say, a loading up to, say, 3,000 pounds, which can be an average cabinet weight in a lot of data centers. So what you need to look at is if your cabinet, if your rack is going to be sitting with 4 points, in other words, you have those feet of that rack have 4 feet to it, you need to make sure that raised floor can go ahead and support that. And most raised floors can go ahead and do that. And then if you have certain conditions where you need to raise the pedestals up or anything like that, you can do that too. So it's very flexible as far as that goes. So the raised floor is under your feet, but if you look overhead, you've typically got a ceiling plenum. Even in the modern data centers, you have a ceiling plenum there as the hot aisle return that's going to back to an air handler. Now, the only place you might not see this is if you have an immersion data center, because most data centers, even if they're water cooled, will have an air cooling component in order to make sure that you don't have heat buildup. Now, because of that, we have this hot aisle, and that hot aisle will go up to that ceiling plenum up above, and that ceiling plenum is usually 4, 5, 6 feet deep, and it's pretty deep because we want to slow down the velocities. We don't want to have a lot of losses just with trying to move the air around. Now, that ceiling plenum might have some structural elements like some I-beams or some joists, those kinds of things. That doesn't matter as much. It doesn't impinge upon the airflow as much. But usually if you're going to have, say, the network or anything like that, it's typically going to be below that ceiling plenum in order to provide straight to the racks. And you might have that above the racks or within the aisles themselves. Now, I've been talking a lot about that airflow. And in the older data centers, and even today's data centers, you might have that raised floor as that cold air plenum. Again, the idea of that airflow is to go out through that raised floor, go through the perforated tiles into the cold aisles, and you might have those sealed off in a modern data center. It's generally good practice. It's much more efficient. Or you might do a cold room flooding, and the entire data center itself might be just cold flooded if you don't have a raised floor. And you might do that hot aisle containment, and that means that you keep the hot aisles closed up and even closed up to the ceiling plenum. And that way the air itself, the cold air or cooler air, goes throughout the rest of the data center. It goes to the servers. The servers pull from that cooler air and eject it into the hot aisles, so that's their return air. And then it can go into the ceiling plenum, and from that ceiling plenum it can be pulled into whatever HVAC, the cooling, the air conditioning system that you might have. And that can be a direct evap, indirect evaporative, whatever that system might be. And that's where the heat is taken out. And again, the cooler air is pushed back through that raised floor or out in that data hall. Now, that airflow path is just circular. It just does that every day. It just keeps taking the heat out from that mechanical equipment, and then the servers themselves go ahead and heat up that cooler air, and it's just that cycle back and forth, back and forth. Now, the control on that is the mechanical systems will say, well, this is how much heat is being generated by the IT equipment. So as that changes throughout a given day, they're able to read that and say, well, this is how much heat is being generated. We need to speed up or slow down on our entire cooling systems in order to match whatever IT load there is. So they don't need to overcool or anything like that. And therefore, they can operate very efficiently, especially if they know what that IT equipment is doing. They can go ahead and anticipate that. And they can look at the outside air and say, well, we have a certain amount of outside air that we could use because it's nice and cool as well. We can bring that in and just feed that into the data center, depending on how much moisture there might be or how much other contaminants there might be in that particular air. They might go ahead and do that or not. Okay, let's talk about the configuration of the racks and the row layouts, because engineers might plan it out to be a certain way on that facility level, but by the time you get down to the IT personnel, they might have a certain idea of what they want it to look like, and that's given proximity to the networks, other groups, their redundancy levels, what spare equipment they might want to have, the distances as well. They might want to have a shortened amount of distance between them. And there might be other things such as security. They might want to put their racks or rows in a certain cage, even within that data hall. So the teams will work together on that space planning and figure out what can be done, but they'll also look at the power amounts, the cooling, and just make sure they can provision enough for that particular rack or row of racks or that entire room even, depending on who the customer is. And they also, if they have multiple customers per data hall, they also want to make sure that if there's certain conditions where they need to have provisions or privacy, they can go ahead and do that. So all those aspects are taken into consideration before anyone deploys a rack for a customer. Let's take a minute to talk about data center cleaning. Now, the whole idea behind data center cleaning is that you're removing contaminants from that data center space. That's going to help out your data center overall, especially all of that equipment, and it prevents downtime, it increases your equipment reliability, and the performance as well. So you're doing your data center a favor by cleaning it every once in a while. Now, the things that can cause a server to go awry and cause issues for replacement, we're talking the particulates ranging in micrometers or micrometers, however you want to pronounce it, but we're talking 0.001 to 100 micrometers. And that's the size that we're talking about and getting rid of. And this helps with filtration, but it also helps with cleaning. So that preventative maintenance of that filtration, that's a must in order to keep a lot of particulates out. But they still get in. And this isn't just by opening the door and closing the door. Sometimes they're just generated, people just walking around. Sometimes it just happens. But the data center is not a clean room. And I mean the clean room by definition, where you might be making microchips, that kind of thing. This is not that type of environment. So you're going to have particulates, and they might cause the occasional failures, that kind of thing. But what we're trying to do is prevent that by doing the occasional cleaning. And that can happen whenever you're doing a wholesale replacement of a lot of different systems or servers. So if you're an enterprise and you decide, you know what, we're going to take out these two rows of racks, we're going to replace them with something newer and more efficient, go for it. And while you're at it, go ahead and do a cleaning routine in that area to remove any of those particulates while you can. And of course, you might want to call one of those places that is certified as an Association of Data Center Cleaning Professionals, ADCCP, and they have a whole certification process. So they make sure that they have guides and standards for their methodology of cleaning, as well as the chemicals and equipment that they're going to be using. And they can also do things like measure the air and where particulates might be coming from, or if you have a lot of failures, that kind of thing, they might be able to help you out. And on top of that, they might say, well, your raised floor is really dirty down there. We do not want to go in there while you have operating equipment. Or they might just state the risks of doing so if you really want to just get that cleaned. Those kinds of things can definitely be done by those professionals. On top of all that, they can even look at what your data center surface is and how they're doing, and if there's non-stick, making sure that there's non-skid for safety measures. Plus, they can do anti-static. And they'll look at all the surfaces that you might have across your data center, not just under your raised floor or just on the floor itself. They'll look at the cabinets, they'll look at everything that might be hanging or supporting in your data center, and can even look above your ceiling grid at the ceiling plenum as well. One of the reasons for cleaning is zinc and tin whiskers. And these are whiskers, and essentially it's just a long thread, and eventually it'll break. And it keeps forming over time with a collection of zinc or tin. And whenever it breaks, it can cross between one circuit and another and therefore cause short circuiting and a failure of the server. Now, zinc whiskers are the most common because it's mostly steel components that have a zinc coating, and that helps resist oxidation, which is just rust. Now, the zinc whiskers can form on all sorts of surfaces across the data center. So if you have a raised floor that hasn't been touched in quite some time, you might have like a zinc-coated steel surface with all sorts of whiskers on it. You pull that thing up or you move things around and you send all these whiskers into the air streams. And some of these can be 2 millimeters long and you can see them. Others you might not be able to spot, but sometimes they'll just like things look like things are furry. And that is that zinc. And what you don't want to do is break off any of that or wipe it around, because that's going to break all of that off, send it into the airstream, and potentially cause a failure. So if you do see it, don't touch. just go ahead and call one of those cleaning services, and when it's time, you can go ahead and point out to them exactly what you saw and hopefully where, and they'll be able to take care of it. What is commissioning? Well, you can look at the definitions, but in a nutshell, commissioning is how are you going to go ahead and make sure that your data center can operate correctly. Go ahead before you put any IT equipment or anything in it and operate it how you think it should be operated from 0 to 100% full. Now, commissioning is crucial because you're looking to trust that data hall with putting your IT equipment and being able to handle whatever you put into it. This means that you need to know that if you only put in one rack that's half full, is it going to be okay, or is it going to be starved for air or other aspects? And then on the flip side, if your data center is completely full, is it going to be operating at 100%? Is it going to be capable of supporting all of the IT equipment and load that you have for it? That commissioning process runs the gamut on understanding how you're going to perform that entire data haul from one end of the spectrum to the other. Now, as you might suspect, this is looking at your current and your future needs. So this isn't something that you're looking at just for today or at the end state. You need it to operate everywhere in between. And this also means how can you anticipate not just what you have today, what you can buy for IT equipment on the market, but what you can buy tomorrow and see what that IT equipment is. And you can sort of plan against that as well. So if you have a certain density that you're operating at now, or that you are saying, well, the first day or first week or first year, we're going to be operating with this much load, this much density, but in the future, we can operate at a certain density or an even greater load. Those are the things that commissioning is hoping to solve so that you can trust that your data center can perform, again, across that low to high load. The other aspect is you might be constantly replacing equipment inside that data hall all the time. Every 2-3 years, maybe you're doing a wholesale replacement, or you're doing that every month where you have new customers moving in, whatever the case might be. But think about this data center refresh. Your power, your cooling equipment, how often is that getting refreshed? Not as often. Every 20, 30, 50 years, depending on what it is, you might not see a refresh for that long. So you have to be really prepared to understand how your data center can perform, and that might be that max capacity on your power and cooling side, just to understand where that max might perform today in order to gauge against that for the future. Now, there's commissioning guidelines out there specific towards data centers, but you can even take a general one as published by ASHRAE, the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers. And they use 5 levels where you're looking at such things like the factory witness tests, and then you're doing the inspections on the submittal, you're doing the installation inspections and verification that it meets whatever the design drawings are doing. And then you're looking at all those components and testing it to those design loads. This is where the crucial step is. Yes, you might do a factory witness test and it can handle things in the factory, but once it's installed, is it installed correctly? Is it providing the same loads that it was originally promised to do? Is it operating over the low band? In other words, that low performance. In other words, you don't have that data hall that full. Is it okay to operate that in that low load condition as it is in that high load condition? And you can look at all that component testing before you start to look at it with that level 5. And this is the last testing that you're doing on the commissioning, and that's that system integration testing. And that is looking at everything holistically. And holistically, we're talking about all of the equipment operating together. So if you have 5 air handlers that are serving a data hall, all 5 of them are operating together. Then you're looking at also the conditions for the data hall, where you might say, well, what if we have to shut one of them down for maintenance or failure? And then you can look at each one of those to see how it's going to perform, and you can do the commissioning on the entire system and see how it reacts. And this isn't just about the equipment itself and how that's reacting, but also the control system and how it's operating as well. What are the responses, and what's the response time for that automated equipment to go ahead and gear up or down based on the loads? And you can go ahead and start to push the envelope so that you can see the original design was maybe for a certain number of megawatts across your data hall. Say we've got a 5-megawatt data hall, and then you say, well, let's go ahead and ramp it up to that 5 megawatts And then you realize, oh, well, we've got 5.1, 5.2, 5.5, 5.8 megawatts before we start seeing an increase on the overall temperatures that you might see, that it starts to ramp out of control. In other words, you're testing beyond the initial performance. And you can start to do this with some of those commissioning guidance. And it really depends on how much you want to pay for and how much you want to do as well. Now, to do that commissioning, you're going to need a lot of startup documentation, any of the devices and any of the as-built drawings or equipment, all of that you're going to need as inputs for that commissioning process. Now, you might have certain operating parameters and conditions that you worked with on the design engineering side, but for the commissioning side, you might want to look at, as mentioned, going above and beyond, but also, what are those other parameters that you might be looking at? What about operating at a higher temperature? And to see what it can do, you can really start to look at pushing those boundaries on those operating conditions, and therefore you can develop procedures around that. Plus, you can develop certain procedures around, if you have certain equipment failures, what that might mean to your overall system and what you might have to do to react. And when you're doing the commissioning on, say, an empty data hall, you're going to provide all sorts of load testing equipment, and that means just load banks. In other words, you have basically heaters that are sitting in that data hall providing load, just like your IT equipment would, except you're just generating heat in order to make sure that your cooling systems can perform, but you can also do the same thing on your power side. So there's a lot of ways that you can look to really stress test your data hall before you even put any IT equipment in it. Now, the other thing is you can do retro commissioning, and that means that you go ahead and are reconfiguring, refurbishing your data hall, and you can figure out what those parameters can be that you perform at. This means pushing beyond your basic loading that you might be expecting for that data center or what that data hall was originally designed for. And now you're operating in the future and you've taken out a lot of load or a lot of IT equipment and you refurbish this data hall or data center or just even this building and you're not quite sure of that entire impact. Well, you can go ahead and start doing all that load testing to really, again, push what you might be able to look at. Plus, you can point out the weaknesses. So there might be certain aspects where your cooling system is really good on performing on total load, but whenever you're looking at, say, a high humidity condition, it might not perform up to expectations. So you might realize, hey, when it's raining outside and we're pulling in 100% outside air, we just can't handle it at that point. We're just going to have high moisture content in the air. And that might be bad for that IT equipment, of course. So you just have to realize that when you're looking at that overall parameters on what you can do as far as your power and cooling. And of course, on top of all of that, you need to look at what those space parameters are. You might have an oddly shaped space or certain conditions where you might not be getting airflow or water flow or whatever the conditions might be to a certain area of that data center. That can happen. And you can look to prevent that or try to mitigate that somehow with other measures. And all of those things should come out in that commissioning process to understand how you're loading up your data center as you go and how you can, again, operate more efficiently. Thank you for joining the Green Data Center Podcast, Season 4, Episode 4. Please don't forget to like and subscribe, and of course, we're always looking for feedback, so if you do like what you hear, do hit the like button. And of course, visit the website, greendatacenterman.com, and provide any suggestions on subjects you'd like to hear. The idea that we focused on the data center hall and the IT space was brought about because of one of those comments, and it started a conversation where, again, that colleague basically said it would be great to just have an episode devoted to that, especially for those people who have not necessarily walked a lot of data center floors before. And of course, visit thegreendatacenterman.com for the full discount to the Data Center Essentials classes on udemy.com. Until next time, we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again.